Act, session number 30951, real one.
Could you tell me when and where you were born?
Yes, I was born in Birmingham. Quite a while ago.
Okay, and what was Birmingham like? Did you grow up in Birmingham?
Yes, I did. Small town compared with today, obviously, not the concrete jungle it is today. And so I went to school at the high school, which was the girls' school at that time, travelling across Birmingham city centre during the war, when they were having bombs and hose pipes and things. My father had his own business in Birmingham, centre Birmingham, so he used to sort of take us part way, and then we would be on the tram to school.
What was it like with the bombs and things exploding around you?
Right, well, to start with, I suppose it was quite a while before they actually started bombing, because we thought it would happen immediately, and it didn't. If I give you some flavour for it, it was Tuesday night. My friend from school was staying with me. A friend of my sister's was staying with me. I had two younger sisters. And Daddy had got a dugout air raid shelter into the garage with railway sleepers and all this sort of thing. So the alarm went, the siren went, so down we all went into this air raid shelter. We heard the bombs whistling down, which was, you've been told, that's what happened, you know. So these bombs whistled down, and then we got the all clear, so we all went out, and everything looked fine, just the same as it always did. And so it was just at the time, there was some dance craze, I can't remember what it was, but so my friend and I were on the lawn doing this dance, you know, because it was a bit of a relief, after all, we hadn't been blown up or anything. And so then they came and said there were unexploded bombs in the front of the house, in the road in front of the house. So Daddy said, OK, fine, we'll all sleep on the floor in the back of the house. So indeed we did. And the next morning, in the daylight, we went out, and just a few yards from where we'd been sleeping were some little holes, which were obviously an unexploded bomb. So we'd actually slept much closer. So we were bundled into the car, had to open all the windows, got the air raid wardens or whatever they were to come in, and were taken to stay with my aunt and grandmother in sort of almost just outside Birmingham. And then, so that was fine. And then on the Saturday night, same thing all over again. And they literally put the bombs that they dropped just feet away from the original holes. So it got quite close. And then we opted out to go to Sutton Coalfield and sort of spend each night with the other grandmother, and then sort of get back in the morning and do the traipse across town, and just hope to God your house was still there when you got back. So it was quite real.
Mm.
And one of the things, of course, I remember is the declaration of war, because we were evacuated to Cheltenham, and I just hated it. I mean, I really wasn't a leave-home girl at all. I just hated it. Mummy and Daddy came down on the day that war was declared, and I can remember to this day sort of sitting there and listening, you know, and not that we knew what it meant, not at all. So we went home, and then we were evacuated then, just the family and my grandmother, who must have been late 60s or so, I suppose, to a little cottage just outside Stratford-on-Avon that my aunt had been renting with friends. So, and that was living another life entirely. The only water we had was in the tap across the road. No kitchen to speak of, a little cubby hole. No bathroom, loo at the top of the garden, you know. And so we had 3 months, I think it was, of just roaming around. Here's the eldest, I was supposed to give lessons, you know, school lessons, which meant none of us did very much. And so it continued until sort of about the Christmas, I think. We all hated being away from home, so we went home, and then of course they started bombing properly, so about which time we were back at home again. Still, we survived.
So you got through the war?
Yes.
And what did your mother do?
Oh, she was home. She was positively at home, as were that generation of women, of course.
Mm.
You know, you didn't work, your husband would be seen not to be able to support you, for one thing. I mean, when I started working again, because I chose to, and I had the opportunity to, the kids were both at school, I used to say, you know, go to a dinner party. When I was, you know, the kids were tiny, or before I got married, And the woman next to you would say, what do you do? And you'd sort of say, I've got a little part-time job. How could you have? You couldn't look after husband and children properly. Go to that dinner party today. What do they say? What do you do? Oh, I stay at home and look after the... You couldn't possibly stay at home and look after the children. You ought to be doing a job. What goes around, but mostly the company I worked with at the time were there to offer opportunity. You didn't have to. If you wanted to, you needed the opportunity.
This is the company you ran after?
No,
you...
I didn't. No, it wasn't my company.
Sorry.
No, it was Steve Shirley, who's now Dame Stephanie Shirley, and she started the company. It was writing systems and computer stuff, you know, and I wasn't technical. So I went through it on the other side.
When did you, just so we, that's where we're going to end up, but when did you start doing that? Can you remember roughly the date?
1969, May 1969. And I retired in, May, March 1950. So I was there a long time. Mm.
Okay, so let's go back to school and the evacuation. War finishes. What happens next?
I didn't want to go to university. My father said I could, but limited for women in those days. What did you do? Mostly you taught, and I really didn't want to be a teacher. And certainly, I mean, even if I'd wanted to, which I didn't, going into medicine was very, you know, was very, very early. So I decided to stay on for what they called a general course, and we did air navigation and all sorts of things, did literature, did stuff that you just didn't have time for in the general curriculum. And that was a wonderful year, really sort of like a gap year these days, really, except I was still in school. And then, so what was I going to do? And typically, my father decided that I really should go into banking. It was a very nice occupation for a young woman. So into banking I went, and I've never been so bored. But, I mean, you have to go back unbelievably for you when there were no computers, you know, and we'd sort of do the statements in the morning and we'd do sort of the ledgers in the afternoon on big machines, you know. Anyway, so...
Let me just make sure I understand. So, so how old are you when you start banking?
18.
So you do,
yeah.
Do the
left school. I did the year at school, yeah. So I must have left school, you know, sort of 17-ish.
And you mentioned, just before we talk about banking, you mentioned that you studied air navigation.
Yes, I did.
What was that like?
We didn't want to do ordinary maths. I mean, that was, you know, we'd done our school certificate. And so normally then you'd go into quite a hard, fast curriculum, going to, in those days, higher school. Well, we weren't going to do high school. So the maths teacher, who was a young woman, sort of said, okay, let's do something else. I'll tell you what, we'll do air navigation, which was absolutely wonderful. You know, quite crazy, but absolutely wonderful.
Did you particularly enjoy it? Do you...
Well, I mean, the maths side was something reasonably good at, but it was just the fact you were doing something that, in fact, was closer to the war too, you know, boyfriend flying and that sort of thing. So it did bring us a bit more realistically.
You mentioned the boyfriend flying. Was he?
Flying Lancasters.
Was he?
Trained out in Florida, and then was flying Lancasters. But in fact, by the time he got, I mean, he volunteered and that, but by the time he got out here and did about three ops, and I think God gave me a taste of what it must have been like.
Did he tell you much about it?
Not a lot. I don't think any of them did, but you could read between lines, you know, if you know them well enough.
So. I was just wondering whether any of this was contributing to an interest in flying.
Well, absolutely, because alongside it, I was running this unit of the Women's Junior Air Corps, as it was called in those days. And, I mean, it was girls from 14 to whenever, 18, 19, whenever. And so basically we were fostering an interest for women in flight. This particular unit had its own band, which was... I just can't imagine the noise we used to make. But anyway, we had competitions and all sorts of things. And it was very good, again, it was a discipline. I mean, we did a certain amount of drilling a sort of just general interest in flying. And in fact, it was a national organisation. So after a while, they actually got scholarships to get pilot's licence, but never came my way. So, but we, you know, it was just an interest, and I like people, so.
How did you hear about it? How did you get involved?
Oh, it was local. No, I mean, it was like belonging to the scouts or the guides or something. And I joined it, and I thought it was fun, and then found out that I was actually running the unit in the end.
And what did you learn about flying from doing that?
Oh, I was trained. It sounds quite ridiculous, and it was, I'm sure. But the local aerodrome was Castle Bromwich, which is why they bombed us, because we were directly on the flight path to Castle Bromwich. And so there was the small RAF station, and there was the link trainer, and we were all taken down, well, not all, officers were taken down, and I did my link training. So I got my certificate for doing link training, which again, I mean, it was just like the fair today. It was a box that tipped and told and jumped up and down, and you had to be able to navigate and fly it. You know, so I learned to fly, if you like, definitely inverted commas, by doing link training.
I've not heard of link training before.
You haven't?
No. Oh, can you tell me a bit more about it?
Don't say too much about what you haven't. People begin to look at me and say, how can she still be standing and talking? Oh, it's just literally, I mean, they get flight simulators now. Well, it's all computerized and they can do what they like. Well, I mean, they'd sort of, you know, I don't know what happened outside really very much to do because I was inside. So, but you would, you know, you'd have to fly straight and level. So you'd got your, we were talking about instruments where we flew, you got a horizon that tipped and you had to keep it level. And you had to learn how to use your rudder and what have you, your ailerons, if you were going to turn. So literally the very basics of flight, as flight was. And we're going back now. We're talking about 47, 48 sort of thing, aren't we? Don't quote the numbers. I think I get my ages all wrong. Get the years all wrong.
I'm interested because I'm wondering whether that was an unusual skill to have as a woman,
or especially it was
as a girl.
I think it was something we did because the opportunity was there. Who wouldn't, you know? And it was your first lesson in flying. You were stuck very safely on the ground, but it was learning how to fly.
And when the scholarships came up, would you like to have learned properly?
I don't really remember being terribly, terribly fussed about it, so. Obviously wasn't.
Okay, so you went off and you were at the bank.
Yes.
Using huge machines from the sound
of
it. And what happened next?
End of the war. The men all wanted their jobs back. So the bank went through and said, okay, we'll keep you and we'll keep you and you can go, have some money and go. Unfortunately, they said to me, we'll keep you. I was so fed up. And they moved me to another little a smaller branch. At least I was at the head office. And they moved me to a smaller branch. And I thought, I just can't do this. I really can't do it. And while we'd been at the bank, really more for fun, an evening out, with a lot of us went to, Mildred Berry's Secretarial School for Ladies, the kind of thing. And we learnt to type and shorthand and always dreadful, but nevertheless. So then I decided, okay, I'll go something entirely different. So I went off as secretary to the travelling officer of Citizens Advice Bureau, who covered the country, so left me most of the time in the office answering the queries that came in from the CABs, which was simply brilliant training. You can imagine. I mean, they didn't know. I had to find out. So that was brilliant training. And so I stayed there for quite a while. And And then I decided, okay, let's move again. I mean, I wasn't a flippity-jibbity, but I'd done it, and, you know, I thought I'd like to go on. So I then became secretary to, ran the small office of a centrifugal pump manufacturer. Now, don't ask, I haven't a clue. I just answered the phone, made the appointments, and went to the British Industries Fair, which was the equivalent of, you know, the trade fairs of today. And sort of talk to people about something. I had no idea what I was talking about. So that was very good as well. And then while I was there, I won the competition to go to Australia.
So tell me about the competition.
Junior Air Corps National decided to hold a national competition. And to start with, the sort of first session was to write 7 essays. Future flying, as you saw it flying today, future flying. It was going to Australia, so write about Australia. Oh, I mean, 7. And I quite liked writing, so you know, probably tell from the notes. I quite liked it because I talked to a typewriter. Well, I talked to the computer now, much better, but I talked to the typewriter. So I quite enjoyed doing it. My uncle was on one of the Strathnava boats going over, ploughing backwards and forwards to Australia. And he said Australia was God's own country, so he sort of filled me in a bit. And anyway, long story.
Can you remember, do you still have any of the essays?
I shouldn't think, funny enough, you should ask me, because I thought the other day, I wonder if I've still got them. I have no idea.
I wonder, can you remember anything that you said? Can you remember how you described the future of flying? Or?
No.
Too long ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just thank goodness we can, I suppose. And I've never flown up till now. So I'd flown Tiger Moth. That's, I mean, not me piloting, I'd just flown in a Tiger Moth.
Why was it, when did you do that?
Goodness knows. I mean, it must have been an opportunity that came for us all. I mean, we're very anxious to get the girls airborne and that sort of thing, so it encouraged their interest. So I think it must have been one of those times to went flying in a Tiger Moth, which was really the proper way to fly.
Why was that?
Well, it's proper. It's flying. It's not going off in a great... air hangar or something like that. I mean, it was proper flying. And so that was fun. But so I did my seven essays, and then there was sort of local call saying you have been shortlisted. So then it was the next stage was seven shortlisted entrants were going to be interviewed in London. Now, the whole part behind this was that all sorts of companies were doing, it was the first competition after the war virtually, you see. And so companies were going to donate, you know, for the publicity for them, they donate. Asher did scarves. I had two ball gowns done by Couturier, a cocktail gown done by, I think it was Michael Sherrod or somebody, and the cocktail hat, shoes, gloves by Dent, Burley bras, stockings by somebody else, uniform by Birmingham Company, raincoat by another Berman company, which was when I met my brother-in-law, who married my sister, so that was one of those things. And everything, makeup. I was did makeup by the woman who used to make up the cream in those days. Hair done, luggage. I mean, you know, if you'd stood me there stark naked then and said, now you're going to Australia, I would have been fully fitted. So, but that was after I'd won the competition, of course, so I jumped a bit. We had the, but it really was to say, so the people interviewing were a panel of people from Burley, from Cyclex, from wherever, whatever. So if they were giving you bras, some of them had a seat on this board. And I remember distinctly, two of the girls had actually got their wings, so I thought, well, I mean, I really wasn't fast, you know. I can't believe I was so laid back. I don't think I thought for a minute I'd win, you know, so it was fine. And so I went in and I remember distinctly, of course, BOEC and Qantas, because we were going to fly about BOEC and Qantas. Australia House, Victoria League, because they were going to arrange all hospitality, so that sort of thing. I remember to this day sort of walking in this vast number of people all sort of sitting there. And then they asked questions.
Can you remember what they are?
I mean, the sort of questions you'd be asked, wouldn't you? I mean, you know, what do you do with the Junior Air Corps? You know, what did you do before? Why would you like to go to Australia? You know, and I mean, the sort of thing it's glib to an extent is that my uncle does it regularly and says it's God's own country, repeating what I said before. But I mean, that sort of, it was a very wide. And so you've got somebody who's going to do your bras asking, I don't know what. But so it went on like that. And then we had lunch spread out around, obviously to see if we could eat without putting our peas on a knife or something. After lunch, we'd sort of, the seven of us sort of said, okay, fine, they're bound to have one or two of us back, you know. Anyway, I was first. And when I went in, Lady Leverhulme said, right, poor Miss Tenor, you are going to Australia. And that was it. Then it broke loose. I mean, the press, I was, next morning, Sunday Express, you know, was Britain's perfect air girl. And oh, it was quite crazy, quite crazy. And after that, I mean, I was shampooed, curl permed, uniformed, you name it. The whole world went crazy.
So how long did the preparations take before you left?
Well, that was, I suppose I flew in Marchish, I think, out to Australia. So I suppose it was January-ish. I'm not really at all clear. Can't remember now when it was, but it must have been quite a while, so it must have taken at least 3 months to push me into shape. So then...
Did you have any sense why you won? Why they chose you?
Do you know what the press said afterwards? They said they had bet on me because I smiled. So, I don't know. I mean, and gift of the gab possibly as well. But, and I think it was because I'd be much more nervous doing this today with you than I was, because this is something positive we're doing, than I was doing something really which wasn't going to affect me very much. How little I knew.
So what happened? Tell me about the next stage, about the journey.
Okay, so cockpit pass and flying out of constellations. So if you've ever seen a constellation, it was the most beautiful aeroplane. It curved, absolutely beautiful. And again, I guess 40 passengers.
Was this your first flight?
Yes.
What was that like?
Oh, well, I mean, you set out from London, say bye, Mum and sisters, and set out for Australia. I mean, you might as well say you're going to the moon. I mean, you know, it was just that strange. So anyway, flew to Rome, because in those days, of course, we couldn't go very far without refueling. There were ordinary sort of good old piston engines. So Rome, lunch. Of course, everywhere I went was the red carpet, so the station manager comes and takes me to lunch. Back in the aeroplane, and where would we have gone? Probably sort of Karachi, Calcutta, Singapore. Singapore, I stayed at Raffles for the night, which, I mean, even, you know, you'd heard of Raffles. I mean, you know, stayed in Raffles for the night. Oh, stayed in Cairo, that's right, because I remember, so it was Rome, Cairo, night stop Cairo, because, I mean, it took weeks to get to Australia sort of thing. So night stopped in Cairo, and I can remember the next morning looking out of the window to a bright blue jacaranda tree, which was very exotic and I'd not seen before. Then on to Singapore, I think must have been the next night stop. So we touched down in Karachi, Calcutta. And then Singapore was Raffles. Then on to Jakarta. I mean, you had really short hops, so we, you know. And then to Darwin. And then on the final lap, down to Sydney, and we were on the way to Sydney, and the skipper said the stewardess up, said, "Do you want to come up front, the cockpit?" So I said, "Yeah, I'd love to." And he said, "There's your Southern Star, you're over," you know, and that was quite something. It was pretty good. Singapore in those days, I mean, it really is, it's absolutely hilarious. Singapore in those days, the runway was not very flat, it was a sort of bit wavy navy. And the skipper said I could go up. They had a jump seat, so I could go up and sit in the jump seat, which was between the pilots. And so far, and I was strapped in there. And he did not do a very good landing. I mean, I don't think it was his fault, the fact that he hit a bump and then it went up again, you know. Anyway, when I went back, the lady behind me tells you, "You weren't very good." I can't imagine what the passengers were thinking. And then I arrived in Sydney.
And what did you have functions, duties?
I was there as a youth ambassador for England, well, for Great Britain. And so got to the airport, all the passengers went off. They said, "Would you stay, Miss Pennell?" So I stayed and then sort of freshened my face up a bit and then got to the top of the steps and there was this guard of honour. Now, I had been on the receiving ends of God's honour, but actually had never done one, if you see what I mean. So somebody comes rushing up with a big bouquet of flowers and newsreels. So down I went, sort of saying, "You're very nice and very smart," or whatever you think you'd say. And into the terminal, they said, "Somebody here to see you." I thought, who? My uncle was in on the boat from home, so that was lovely. And then back again, they said, "Okay, a cup of coffee, you know, relax." Reporter comes rushing up, says, "Where's that Sheila? I missed her, I'll get killed." I had to go back on the aeroplane. They took the flowers off me. set up the Guard of Honour. And because he was a rival paper, Dan, it all had to do Dan again. The next thing was going off to reception of the Lord Mayor. And then the next thing was to go into the cinema to see myself arriving. Crazy. And then I started really quite, I stayed with private homes organised by the Victoria League. And I started the hard work in as much as I don't actually find talking or speaking very hard work as long as I love and I know what I'm speaking about. You know, give me a subject I have know nothing, I'd probably be totally dumbstruck. But this, to my way of thinking, is something that possibly people ought to know because it's so far from today, so far. So I set off and I did Sydney. The tour was Sydney, up to Newcastle, back to Sydney, fly to Perth. At Perth, I had my 24th birthday, I suppose. Well, a birthday. And we went to an open-air cinema, and they asked me to go up on the stage, and I went up on the stage, and the whole audience sang Happy Birthday. How crazy can it get? I was due to fly with the Women's Australian Air Force out there, and unfortunately I got ear trouble flying, because of course everything wasn't as good as it is now, so I couldn't fly again. So I have a memento, they gave me a little silver bowl with things on there. Then off to, where did I go from Perth, up to, probably on the way from Sydney, I did Sydney, Adelaide, Melbourne, Perth, and then back to Sydney again. And in Sydney, there was this great rivalry between Sydney and Melbourne. So everywhere I went, they got me doing recordings and things. And so Sydney and Melbourne were like this, you see. So they got me on the way back and said, so which did you enjoy most, Sydney or Melbourne? And I thought, ooh. So I was as tactful as I knew how to get me out of that hole. And I had actually been asked to do a recording in London before I left. I'd never done anything like that, never. So I did one, and they rang me up the next day and said, you better come back. You laughed all the way through it. We could hardly hear a sound. So I had to go in and do another one. And so that was the beginning. And then I did my bob to the Governor General. So that was received by the Governor General. And at the time, his aide-de-camp was Princess Diana's father. I mean, the children say to this day, children, they say, you know, played your cards right. He was the most glamorous young man you've ever seen. So that was it. And then come home.
What was it like coming home?
Psst. Where do you go from here? I mean, you've been fated. I think the thing, we were vaguely talking about it earlier on, that I stood back and this other person did it. And I've heard several people say, in a really major experience, that's what happens to them. So, and then when you get back, this person comes back in. And so you've got this sort of hiatus of getting yourself back together. How do you after an experience like that, you know? So I thought, well, I think the one thing I certainly couldn't do was going back to being a secretary again. I mean, so I applied to BOAC, as it was in those days. Normally, because the jobs were so few and far between and everybody wanted to be an air hostess, they sort of wanted nurses or teachers or certainly another language. So it was sort of people with sort of higher education, rather, because it would be useful on the flight. And there was me, and all I'd done was roll around Australia giving talks. Anyway, the other thing that you had to be was a reasonable relationship between height and weight. Well, I could manage that one. So got the interview, and I think to an extent I was still publicity value to them because, I mean, you know, I'd been publicity. And they were able to say, first pictures of me in uniform flying off. I loved it so much I wanted to do it for a living. So, and it was true. And so I went off.
And what did the interview process consist of?
heaven knows. I should think it was a normal interview. Why do you want to fly? What experience have you got in flying? We see you went to Australia, you flew out the OC, you flew back Qantas. Do you enjoy flying? Have you ever been ill when you were flying? I mean, I would have thought common sense sort of questions, you know. Got into training or anything.